Text 5 or something like that.
Yes, 5.
5? Okay. Trishtaketus Chaikitana Kashi Rajas Chavirjavan Purujit Kunti Bhojascha Shaibyascha Narapungavaha. Translation. There are also great heroic, powerful fighters like Trishtaketu, Chaikitana, Kashiraj, Purujit, Kunti Bhoja, and Shaibya. Text 6. Yudhamanyuscha Vikranta, Uttamojascha Viryavan, Sobhadro Draupadeyascha, Sarva Eva Maharataha. Translation. There are the mighty Yudhamanyu, the very powerful Uttamoja, the son of Subhadra, and the sons of Draupadi. All these warriors are great chariot fighters. Text 7. Asmakam tu vashishtaye tani bodha dvijotama nayaka mama sainyasya samgyartam tan bravimite. Translation. But for your information, O best of the brahmanas, let me tell you about the captains who are especially qualified to lead my military force. Text 8. Bhavan bhishmascha karnascha kripascha samitim jayaha ashvatama vikarnascha somadattistataivacha. Translation. There are personalities like you, Bhishma, Karna, Kripa, Ashvatthama, Vikarna, and the son of Somadatta, called Bhuri Shrava, who are always victorious in battle. Text 9. Anyecha bhava shura mararte tyakta jivitaha nana shastra praharanta sarve yudavisharada. Translation. There are many other heroes who are prepared to lay down their lives for my sake. All of them are well equipped with different kinds of weapons, and all are experienced in military science. Text 10. Aparyaptam tadasmakam palam bhishma birakshitam paryaptam tvidam etesham palam bhima birakshitam. Translation. Our strength is immeasurable, and we are perfectly protected by Grandfather Bhishma, whereas the strength of the Pandavas, carefully protected by Bhima, is limited. Text 11. Ayanaeshu cha sarveshu yata bhagam avastitaha bhishmam eva birakshantu Bhavanta sarvaivahi. Translation. All of you must now give full support to Grandfather Bhishma as you stand at your respective strategic points of entrance into the phalanx of the army. Text 12. Tasya sanjanayan harsham kuru vridha pitamaha simanadam vinadyochai Shankam Dadmo Pratapavan. Translation. Then Bhishma, the great valiant grandsire of the Kuru dynasty, the grandfather of the fighters, blew his conch shell very loudly, making a sound like the roar of a lion, giving Duryodhana joy. Text 13. Tata Shankascha Bheryascha Panavanaka Gomukaha Sahasaiva Bhyanyanta Shabdas Tumalo Bhavat. Translation. After that, the conch shells, drums, bugles, trumpets, and horns were all suddenly sounded, and the combined sound was tumultuous. Text 14. Tata Shvetair Hariyair Yukte Mahati Syandane Stito Madhava Pandavas Chaiva Divyo Shanko Pradadmatu. Translation. On the other side, both Lord Krishna and Arjuna, stationed on a great chariot drawn by white horses, sounded their transcendental conch shells. And finally, text 15. Panchajanyayam Hishekesho Devadattam Dananjayaha Paundram Dadmo Mahashankam Pima Karma Vrikodaraha. Translation. Lord Krishna blew his conch shell, called Panchajanya. Arjuna blew his, the Devadatta, and Bhima, the voracious eater and performer of Herculean tasks, blew his terrific conch shell called Paundra. Text 5. Going back to text 5.
There are also great heroic, powerful fighters like Drishtaketu, Chikitana, Kashiraja, Purujit, Kunti Bhoja, and Shaibya.
So who's speaking? Raise your hand if you know. Sanjaya?
Duryodhana.
Duryodhana. Yes. Duryodhana is... Oh, wait. Yes. Duryodhana is speaking to Dronacharya. He's speaking to his teacher and telling him, he's explaining who are the soldiers, who are the warriors on each side. And he's trying to enliven his teacher, the commander-in-chief. At the same time, he's trying to enliven himself, as, you know, we often do when we're in a great challenge. We look at our side, we examine both sides. Every commander-in-chief will do this in every army. He says, so what have they got? What have we got? They've got their strength, we've got our strength. How can we counteract their strengths over here? Who will we put here? In any kind of battle or competition, there's going to be this kind of strategy. This is quite expected that Duryodhana, after all, this was his war. He was the reigning king for the last 13 years, 14 years. He's been reigning the king. So now he wants to defend what he considers to be his kingdom. And this is strategy. And his conclusion is that he thinks that his side is in a superior position. That's the conclusion. And he's trying to build up his own confidence. And he's trying to... The other point was, we know that he started off talking to Dronacharya, pointing out that your disciple has arranged their phalanx. And remember, another point is, everyone knows who that disciple was. Raise your hand if you know who that disciple was. Question is, who is the disciple? Who is the disciple of Dronacharya who had arranged the phalanx on the other side against his own teacher? That's what we're asking. Yes, Drishtadyumna. Now, so naturally, by Duryodhana reminding him of this, he's reminding him that, remember, this is the son who is destined to kill you. He wanted to get his anger up. Because, of course, he didn't know that Dronacharya was a devotee of the Lord. So Dronacharya was not afraid of death, first of all. And second of all, he knew that he couldn't win because Krishna was on the other side. Only Duryodhana was in this illusion that he was going to defeat God. See, the others, they knew. Bhishma certainly knew. Dronacharya. They know how we're going to defeat Krishna. It's not possible. But, anyway, we'll fight just to go through the motions. So, but he was thinking that Dronacharya was going to become very angry and think that he could defeat Krishna, defeat Arjuna. But, no, that was not going to happen. But Duryodhana was an illusion. He knew that Dronacharya and Bhishma were a bit sympathetic towards the Pandavas. He was very upset about. He knew that all the elders, like Vidura didn't even take part in the battle. Vidura, he was insulted by Duryodhana. He was called the kept son of a kept mistress, kept wife, the son of a kept wife, kept mistress. Very kshata, the word is kshata, that's another name for Vidura. So his parentage was not considered to be as exalted as that of Duryodhana, because Duryodhana, his father's mother was a princess. She was of royal descent. Whereas Vidura's mother was not of royal descent. She was just a maidservant. She was an assistant.
Said Duryodhana's father's mother, and that's the woman who copulated with Parshramuni inside the lake?
No. This is the wives of the Chaturvirya who Vyasadev impregnated. Because Vidura was he was also the son of Vyasadev. So, just see. Vyasadeva was the father of Dhritarashtra and Pandu and Vidura. But Vidura's mother, the princess, she left. She wouldn't even go to see him again, the oldest one. The one who had closed her eyes the first time. So this time she couldn't even go. Vyasadeva, she didn't want to be there. So she sent her maidservant. But that maidservant was so respectful to Vyasadeva that Vyasadeva blessed her and said, "Your son will be the most exalted saintly person." So Vidura is called Saint Vidura. Who knows who Vidura was in his previous life? Raise your hand. Yes, he was Yamaraj. He was cursed. Who was the sage who cursed him?
Mandukya Muni?
Yes, Mandukya Muni cursed him. Because he was, you know the story, that Mandukya Muni was doing his meditation in his cottage, and it so happened his hermitage in the forest. So some thieves and rogues, dacoits, they came and they hid in his hermitage. This is not something only done in olden days. It's even done these days. We see terrorists, they go and they hide in temples, in holy places, because they think that they won't be attacked in those places. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work. You know, one time in India, they did it a few years ago, they took shelter of the Golden Temple, and the Prime Minister just blasted away at the temple. And of course, it almost caused a civil war because the Sikhs were, you know, outraged. Anyway, so these dacoits, they hid there thinking that, you know, we'll be safe here because they would never suspect. But the constables, the government men, they went there and they found them. And they assumed that this so-called sage meditating, they thought he was one of the dacoits, just dressed up like, you know, either that or maybe he was a yogi, but he was a party to this thieving. One way or another, they arrested him, and he was pierced with a lance. So, but then he didn't die. So when he didn't die, the government men realized that he must be a real yogi. So then they went and told the king, and the king came and apologized. He said, "I'm so sorry. Please forgive me and my men, for we didn't know." And so somehow or other, he got forgiven. But then Mandukya Muni approached Yamaraj and said, "Yamaraj, what did I do to get this kind of punishment that I should have a lance through my body?" And Yamaraj says, "When you were a little child, you took a straw and you pierced an insect." And Mandukya Muni said, "Your punishment is too extreme. It's too severe. I was just a child. A child is not responsible for what he does. He's in ignorance. So this is you've made a foolish decision, and I curse you that because you're so foolish, you should take birth as a Shudra for 100 years on earth." So Yamaraj had to take birth as a Shudra. But that Shudra was not an ordinary Shudra. It was Vidura, the great Saint Vidura. So Yamaraj, one of the greatest of all the demigods, perhaps, arguably, the most powerful because he causes the death of everyone. So Yamaraj is so powerful, and he's one of the 12 Mahajans. How's that verse? The 12 Mahajan verse, who knows how that begins?
Swayambhu Narada Shambhu.
Swayambhu Narada Shambhu.
Pralado Kapilo Manu.
Komara Kapilo Manu.
Pralado Janaka Bhishma.
Pralada Janaka Bhishma. Everyone say, Pralada Janaka Bhishma.
Balir Vayasakir Ayam.
Balir Vayasaki Vayam. Vayam. So that Vayam, this verse is spoken by Yamaraj. He is the 12th. Vayam means "and ourself." So these 12 are the Mahajans. They are the great, in the universe, they are considered the greatest authorities on Vedic knowledge. So Yamaraj is one of those. Okay, go on, text 6.
There are the mighty Iyutamanyu, the very powerful Uttamauja, the son of Subhadra, and the sons of Draupadi. All these warriors are great chariot fighters.
Now these are the warriors on the other side, is it not? Because sons of Draupadi, that means Draupadi had 5 husbands, and she had 1 son by each husband. So she had 5 sons. They were all great warriors. And Subhadra, who was the husband of Subhadra? Arjuna, yes. And the son's name was Abhimanyu, yes. So, Abhimanyu, the son of Subhadra, he was only 16 years old. At the time of this battle, he was 16 years old, but yet he was so powerful and such a great fighter that even Duryodhana brought out his name, said, the son of Subhadra. He's a great fighter. Son of... He didn't say the son of Arjuna. Because Arjuna had at least two sons out there. Because one of his sons was from Draupadi. And this son... Of course, Arjuna had two other wives. Subhadra, Draupadi, Ulupi, and the other one, not remembering her name right now. So one of them was the daughter of the Nagas. And so she was... Oh, his other son lived up in Manipur. His other wife, she lived in Manipur. She was Manipuri. So he went up there and he married her and he had a son. A very powerful son. Later, that son defeated him in battle. But he was protected by... He was, in fact, he was killed. His son killed him in battle, but he was saved by his wife. She was able to... she had these kind of Naga serpent-like mystic powers. She could counteract the... Yes. So he had four wives. That's why Duryodhana said the son of Subhadra, because it would have been ambiguous if he had said the son of Arjuna. So he had to say sons of the mother. That made it clear. Subhadra only had one son on the battlefield. So when that son, Abhimanyu, you know the story, he was fighting so extraordinarily one day that the Kurus decided that if we don't stop him, he's going to defeat the whole army. If we don't do something extraordinary. And they also thought that if we can kill him, then Arjuna will be devastated. He'll be broken. So Arjuna was away somewhere, and the idea was that he left with the understanding that his son would be fighting, but others would be protecting, you know, would be there just in case. So while he was away, there's one fighter on the other side. Starts with a J. Jayadratha. So Jayadratha had received a benediction that one time he would be able to hold off the Pandavas. Only once. Because he was always defeated. Every time he fought with them, he was defeated. So he did something, did some penance, and he got a benediction that one time you'll be able to hold them off, to defeat them. So those seven Maharathas, there are different categories of fighters. Just like in our armies, we have, you know, private, corporal, lieutenant, sergeant, captain, major, commander, general, like that. Then 2-star general, 3-star general, 4-star general, 5-star general, commander-in-chief, all these different levels. So these men were the top, commanders and chiefs, Maharathas. So there's Ratha, means he could fight with one chariot driver. Then there's Pancha Rat or Navarat, could fight with 10. Dasarat, just like Maharaj Dasharat, he could fight with 10. Dasharat. Then there's Maharat, and even above that is Atirat. So Maharata means he could fight with thousands of other chariot warriors. Atirata is even something beyond that. Anyway, these were great Maharat Atiratas, all of them, seven. So they unfairly surrounded him. It's not fair for so many great warriors to fight with one. Although the son of Subhadra was also a Maharat or Atirat, but seven against one. So they unfairly, and then Jayadratha got his one chance. He held off the Pandavas, the army, the whole army, this one time. And they blocked. What happened was he went inside the needle. They had formed some kind of a formation. So the idea is, once you go inside, if it closes off, you can't get out again. So he went inside thinking that the other warriors were going to go with him, so he'd have protection there. But Jayadratha sealed it off, and he held them off. They couldn't get in. So he was alone in there. And so they surrounded him, and finally he fought valiantly, but finally he was killed. Now, when he was killed that day, at the end, no one wanted to tell Arjuna. No one. See, there's a Vedic, could say, kind of principle that don't be the bringer of bad news. No one likes to, as it is said, bad news comes of its own accord. So no one wanted to say anything. When Arjuna got back from the battlefield, everyone was looking the other way. No one was taught. He knew something was wrong. He kept approaching. What's wrong? What's wrong? No one. Everyone was turning the other way. Finally, it came out that his son was killed. He was very angry. Very angry that they had allowed this to happen, the others. And it is said in the Nectar of Devotion that when Subhadra found out that her son had died and Krishna was on the battlefield, and he allowed it, you could blame Krishna if you wanted to. But he did not, or she did not. Subhadra didn't blame Krishna. Rather, it said that her love for Krishna remained the same. She did not hold him responsible. Well, this is a real devotee. A real devotee doesn't put the blame on Krishna. That shows how much her love for Krishna. Because one has to love Krishna, ahoi tukya pratiyata, without any conditions. Krishna took away her son. So does that mean that her love for Krishna should change? Krishna didn't do things the way she thought they should be done. Naturally, what mother wants to lose her son at 16 years? Only son. So, but no, her love for her brother didn't change. Well, this is a very important point, that we should never accuse Krishna, blame him, or lose our faith. Prabhupada gave the example that in the Second World War, the fighting was going on, so the The women folk, they went to the churches and they prayed, "Please, God, send back our husbands, bring back our sons, our fathers, our brothers, our uncles." But when they died, all these women became atheists. Because their devotion was tainted with conditions. They wanted God to be their order supplier. Or even now, of the Holocaust, we know the Holocaust, so many millions of people were allegedly killed, slaughtered. So, some people have a very hard time justifying how God could allow that. Supposedly, even to the chosen people. So they have a very hard time. How is this possible? What kind of God is that? This type of God I don't need. This is their conclusion. So they become atheists. So you see, when one's faith is weak and when one's knowledge is poor, he doesn't understand how God is making big arrangements which are good for everyone. God doesn't do anything bad. He does everything good. We have to have faith in that. It's like, for example, if someone's on some sports team and the coach, he's playing and he's doing well, and the coach puts him on the bench. So they say, "What is this? I'm doing well. We're winning the game. And he's putting me on the bench. I could be scoring more points. What, this coach has got something against me. He's prejudiced against me." No. Coach has a better plan. Coach sees the whole picture. You don't see the whole picture. You're just seeing from your little vantage point. Coach doesn't have any prejudice towards one or the other. How can God be prejudiced towards one or the other? He says in Bhagavad Gita, what's the verse?
Samuham sarva bhuteshu.
Yes. Say again, more clearly.
Samuham sarva bhuteshu.
Samuham sarva bhuteshu. Name dveshosti napriya. Ye bhajanti tamam bhaktya. Mai te teshu chav. I am equal to all. I am not envious of anyone. But whoever renders service unto me is a friend and is in me, and I am also a friend to him. So Krishna cannot be envious or partial to one. He's not partial to anyone. They're all his sons. But those who are lacking faith and knowledge, they lose their... They become atheists when they see God does something they don't like. So we shouldn't be like that. That if things don't go the way we want, then alright, I'll leave. Give up this Krishna consciousness. I'll take up serving some demigod, or maybe I'll worship some ordinary boss or politician, or I'll just stand on my own. No, these are all bad suggestions. Any questions? Shoda.
In the Gita, Krishna states that this knowledge should not be imparted to one who is not a devotee. So I was wondering why Sanjaya is speaking to Dhritarashtra, Bhagavad Gita.
Well, he made him a devotee. Dhritarashtra actually became a devotee of sorts. He became a dhira. Dhira is not quite Narottama. But he became a transcendentalist, and he couldn't surrender to Krishna, even though he knew Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But due to he was too sinful, but he was able to give up his material attachment. I was just seeing someone quoted Prabhupada recently, that they asked Prabhupada about Jesus Christ. How is it that Jesus Christ could be, so exalted when he never mentioned the name of Krishna and, you know, so many things. But Prabhupada said because he was detached from this material world, he was completely detached, therefore he's exalted. So Dhritarashtra became detached, so much so that he left. He just left the kingdom. He didn't tell anyone. As a real vanaprastha, he went off to the forest and he was blind. He didn't even tell Sanjaya, his secretary. He didn't even tell him he was going. So this is considered a great accomplishment for someone to leave home and to go off into the forest. Well, this is vanaprastha, because kshatriyas don't accept sannyas, formal sannyas, but this is their similar because it's vanaprastha. So he went off and he performed mystic yoga and he achieved the stage of Adhira. So therefore it was successful. The Dura's preaching was successful. And Sanjaya also was a success. They're all devotees. Sanjaya is also a devotee. You can see at the end, Sanjaya says, my hair is standing on end when I hear this discussion between Krishna and Arjuna. Oh, he must be a devotee. He said, by the grace of Vyas, he's a student of Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva is the great Vaishnava. You got a friend there on your... Okay, any other questions? You had a question, Bhakti Klim?
I was wondering if Vidura would fight, which side he would take?
So you're saying if Vidura would have fought, you want me to do some speculating? Well, yes, Vidura was insulted by Duryodhana. So he put down his weapons and he gave up gave up being a kshatriya, more or less. Gave up his weapons. He just left. He left his bow and arrows there, and he went on pilgrimage. And he met Maitreya, and he got wonderful instructions from Maitreya. So that discussion is there.
This was a question I heard a long time ago, and I was wondering. You were saying that kshatriyas don't take formal sannyas, but there are some paintings, some ISKCON paintings of King Yudhisthira in the dress of a sannyasi. After he'd renounced the kingdom, he took on the dress of a sannyasi.
He took a staff, but not necessarily a sannyas staff. He went to the north, went up to the Himalayas. So they may have, yes, because Prabhupada said he took sannyas. So they may have not quite understood all the subtleties of that. Sannyas means renunciation. But, so in one sense, of course he was a sannyasi. He was greater than any sannyasi because he was a Vaishnava. But still, we know that officially.
It says in text 12, in the purport, that indirectly by the symbolism of the conch shell, he informed his depressed grandson, Duryodhana, that he had no chance of victory in the battle. I was wondering if you could elaborate why that was symbolic and symbolic because he was blowing the conch shell. How is that interpreted as you're going to lose?
Uh-huh. Because although his conch shell was blown like the sound of a lion, Have you ever heard a lion roar? Very loud. Very frightening roar. So, his concha, Bhishma Dev's blowing of the concha was uproarious. In fact, the word in text 13 is tumulo. And you see, this translation is tumultuous. So you see how the Sanskrit word, this word tumultuous, comes from tumulo. Tumulo. Tumultuous. So it was tumultuous, which means extraordinarily loud. But then when Krishna and Arjuna blew their transcendental conch shells, it broke the hearts. So the comparison. No one could blow a more powerful conch shell than Bhishma, but Krishna and Arjuna, their conch shells were transcendental, not material. Also, it's interesting, a little humor here, when Duryodhana says, see all these other great fighters who are prepared to lay down their lives for my sake. So the Vaishnava commentary is, yes, so this means that they will all die. Because they're all, he's saying that yes, they're all preparing to lay down their lives for my sake. What foolish things they're doing.
Why is it that Kshatriyas are not allowed to formally take sannyas?
Yes, there's because the system is that the Brahmanas have four, Kshatriyas three, Vaishyas two, and Shudras only one. They only follow one ashram. Because they're not trained. They're not trained in that. Their occupation is not suited for sannyas. Sannyas means he's the teacher, so they have to be a Brahmin to be the teacher. They have to study and perform all that. So even though these were Vaishnavas, so in a sense, a Vaishnava is above all this, but still they follow. They follow the principles of Varnashram, to set the example for others. Okay, read text 14.
On the other side, both Lord Krishna and Arjuna, stationed on a great chariot drawn by wild horses, sounded their transcendental conch shells.
Yes. Arjuna's horses, his horses were all white. Krishna's horses were not white. His horses were different colors. One was ashen, one was greenish, one was like the color Megapushpa, Balahaka, Shaibya. These were the names of his horse. They were different colors. But Arjuna's horses were all four white horses. Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai, Bhagavad Gita ki jai.